So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
The battle between good and evil has begun. Against an army of shadows comes a dark warrior. The purveyor of good, with a voice of silence and a mission of justice. This is Sting.
Hey everybody, it's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and coming up tonight, Wei, on Review Away, Tony Schiavone always used to over-promote nights being the greatest nights in WCW history, but technically, this event tonight was the biggest event in WCW history.
That's right, we're reviewing Starrcade 1997, the date of the highest pay-per-view buys ever for a WCW pay-per-view.
Not to mention, Wei, that after Bret Hart left the WWF, in the biggest story over the past 20 years, he enters WCW as a guest referee. All that and more coming up on Review Away tonight, plus Eric Bischoff chats about WCW.
He's right here. No, that wasn't good.
That's fine.
No, that sucked.
What are you talking about? That sucked.
Okay.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. It's John Pollock here along with Wei Ting. Now, usually we always go over our drinks that kind of get us going for these podcasts. And Wei, we have tried, I've gone through Red Bull on here, coffee, ginger ale. We're skipping right to it right now. We have beer this week.
Yeah, this week we're drinking beers. We have two beers open. I have an Alexander Keith's India Pale Ale.
And I have a light ale. Uh-huh. I got to last for this hour, however long it is.
Yes, so we are not drinking coffee. We are drinking beers. Why is that?
Because, Wei, it's a late, late Sunday night, and we decided to have a law potluck deal, dinner of some sort.
All right.
And we have beer here.
Yeah.
Because he's alive.
What?
It's live.
Oh, that's right.
So let's get into it. Starrcade 1997, everybody. Taking place Sunday, December the 28th, 1997, from the MCI Center in Washington, D.C. To get over just how old this is, they announced numerous times on the broadcast that the MCI Center opened 3 weeks prior to this event. MCI Center, an older building when it comes to hockey arenas.
No, I don't watch hockey.
Were you watching WCW at this point?
No, not really.
Great. So some historical perspective here from Wei as we go into this. I was watching WCW at this time.
How were you able to catch WCW?
They used to air Nitro on, they did a 1 hour condensed version of it on,
on the new VR.
No,
Wait,
it wasn't
on
the new.
TSN?
No, it was on CH. Had
yeah?
it, and it was Nitro would air 6 days later on like Sunday afternoon, 1 hour, and then TSN started to pick it up, and TSN might already have been airing it at this point. In 97, TSN was airing it at this point.
Yeah.
So you were still able to follow it here in Canada, and this event was like the biggest event in history, like going into it,
mm-hmm.
because it was going to be Hogan and Sting. They had let this build for 18 months
mm-hmm.
from Sting feeling that WCW had doubted his allegiance to them and just became this ominous crow creature in the rafters, and he just stayed there for a year and a half
mm-hmm.
and they were building up, and finally he was going to wrestle, and it meant so much.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how they would fuck this up.
All right.
Now, Wei, I don't know what version you watched of this, but on my tape that I got actually from Dan Lavransky, it featured part of the countdown show.
I did not watch that.
Well, WCW always did the same countdown show. It was Schiavone and Bobby Heenan in a studio at a desk just talking about all what was going to be happening. And it sounds simple, but it was extremely effective, I thought. And all I had was the final, like, 45 seconds of this countdown show.
What did they say?
It's Bobby Heenan with a phone in his hand, cutting the most serious promo you've ever heard from Bobby Heenan about how you have to order this show, and cuts a promo on Hogan and all he's done to WCW. And tonight, Sting is going to represent all of us. How can you not be a part of this? Pick up your phone and order this show. And I picked up my phone and called Rogers just in case they were still airing this. I was so convinced by this promo. Wow. This was awesome.
Cool.
Bobby Heenan totally sold me on this pay-per-view. In the 45 seconds here, I was excited to watch this show.
Why do you think he has never demonstrated that ability since?
Bobby Heenan?
Yeah.
When was he ever put in a position to, like, sell a pay-per-view?
You can argue his entire career.
I think Bobby Heenan's been one of the more effective promos in the industry.
But a serious promo like you just heard on that countdown show?
Well, I mean, he was always, his character was always kind of like the heel, who was always the like the weasel character. I mean, he was never, I mean, he did serious promos in his day, but just not like this. This was like just, you know, the like go home interview to like get people interested in this pay-per-view. I mean, that was more or less the job of Schiavone, if anyone, to on the broadcasts. Be like Jerry Lawler right now selling a pay-per-view. It's just he's not in that position to make any kind of difference.
Okay.
I thought this was great. Then they went into this opening video package, and it's Sting out in the rain in black. And it says on the screen, he witnessed the ruin of an empire. Now he seeks the ruin of a man. And this was when WCW was at their height. Little did they know. The ruin of the empire was coming. Give him 3 years. Schiavone welcomes us to the biggest night in the history of this grand sport. At least of all the times he used to say that, this one you could at least argue that there was that he was being accurate here.
Yeah, that's right.
Your announcers for tonight are Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Dusty Rhodes. And they show all these wrestlers that are in the crowd, such as Rey Mysterio, Glacier, Harlem Heat, Sonny Ono, Wrath, Adam Bomb. And they explain that these men have paid for their own fare to get here tonight just to watch this match and see the fate of WCW.
That would suck to not even get
on the biggest show of the year. It's like, what's my role? Row 8, seat 4.
Yeah, your role.
Sit and cheer.
Your role is you have to pay for your own ticket. You don't even get comped seats.
No. This, to me, if you were a wrestler, like these wrestlers are like so tuned to always appear like a big star and to never fit into the background. And this was like positioning these guys as just total like fans, really, for this whole show.
It really clearly divided who was part of the main roster and who was on the undercard.
Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
After that amazing match with Eddie Guerrero like 2 months earlier. We've reviewed that Halloween Havoc, I believe. Have we? The 97 one? Maybe
probably.
Not. I can't remember. But fuck. This guy is like one of your best talents, and he is in the audience for this show.
Well, but he's a tiny guy.
If nothing else, it did stress the importance of this.
You know what I thought initially? I thought it was a fan in a Rey Mysterio mask. I thought it was a little kid with a Rey Mysterio mask, and it was actually Rey Mysterio himself.
They explain that all the referees' names have been put into a hat, and they're going to draw a name later tonight. And Dusty Rhodes has a big speech about destiny leading us, and Hogan and Sting are here for this huge event. And then Schiavone states that they received a press release from the New World Order that Kevin Nash would not be here tonight, and he was scheduled to face the Giant.
Yes. Why isn't he here?
He is not here, Wade, because he called the office during the day, and he said he thinks he had a small heart attack. That's what he told them. In actuality, it turned out he had indigestion. And he would not be showing up where he was scheduled to do a job for the Giant.
Yeah.
This, if you look throughout Kevin Nash's career, and I do not want to blame anybody here for anything, but there's a unique pattern when Kevin Nash has been scheduled to do jobs and things have occurred.
That's right.
Bound for Glory that we reviewed earlier this year, when he was to face Jeff Jarrett, there was, I believe, a cage match he was at the have with Chris Sabin in TNA, and again, he I think he picked up a toolbox, he said, and did something to him. interesting health this man has had. But Kevin Nash would not be here tonight to face the Giant. I don't know if you caught this way, but they showed the most jacked up wrestling fan in history sitting in the crowd, who I noticed and gave the Scott Putski, at least a candidate for the Scott Putski Award.
This guy
looked ridiculous.
Really?
Like he had to be a worker, but was not. So we start the show off way with Eddie Guerrero against Dean Malenko for the Cruiserweight Championship. But first, we go backstage to WCWWrestling.com with Steve McMichael being interviewed by Mark Madden and Jeff Katz from Geek Week.
Yeah, Jeff Katz, who also did that tremendous Mick Foley interview. 2-hour-long Mick Foley interview.
Yes, very interesting interview. But there was Jeff Katz, who was working with WCW at the time. Shivani states that there are over 24,000 fans in attendance. I was on my computer, so I decided to look up the MCI Center. It holds 20,000 for basketball. I don't think they had 24,000. Guerrero retreats.
You could fit 4,000 fans on a basketball court.
I don't think so.
In the rafters? In the back? They're probably counting that as well.
What do you mean, in the back?
Number of people backstage.
Well, I'm sure they were counting that, but I don't think if you took the surface of a basketball arena and workers backstage that was going to add 4,000 people.
You could.
Okay. You realize 4,000 people is like a hockey arena. It's like the Rico Coliseum.
Maybe they're small people.
They could have been. There might have been a midget or two in there. Early on, Eddie Guerrero retreats to get heat early on in the match and teases leaving. Then he gets back in the ring, dives for the left knee of Malenko, and then he would work on the left knee throughout the match. Tanay brings up that Malenko and his wife had their first child on Christmas night. Yes, Mike Tanay was here for this Cruiserweight match for obvious reasons. Dusty Rhodes.
He was here for the whole show.
Oh, sorry. It's Shivani, Tanay, and Rhodes. I thought Heenan was in there. You're right. Tanay was there for the whole night, thankfully. Mm-hmm. Guerrero, at this point, he's on his knees trying to shake Malenko's hand. I thought he was just great at playing this scared heel who was just trying to fuck with the babyface. We see Guerrero drop kick the steel steps into the left knee of Malenko. Rhodes said he had just heard there are issues going in with regards to the ref in the main event between both camps. So I assume that he had somebody working for him that informed him of this in his earpiece.
Interesting. Okay.
Malenko counters a top rope Hurricane Rana and pushes Malenko. Tries for a gut buster, but that did not turn out too well, that spot. Then there's a sick power bomb by Dean Malenko, who then goes for the clover leaf, but Guerrero avoids and injures the knee of Malenko again. Then we see a top rope drop kick to the knee by Guerrero, and then hits a frog splash onto the knee for the win. I thought this was a very good story they told in this match. They got like 15 minutes and a good cruiserweight bout to open up the show, and Eddie Guerrero keeps the title.
Yeah, I thought Dean was awesome here. He wasn't really doing any sort of graceful maneuver. It was just a lot of hard slams and reversals that had the crowd ooing. And that finish was pretty smartly planned, too. And all it took was for Dean to say, all right, because you've been working on my knee this whole time, I'm going to roll my knee over when you hit me with a frog splash to make everything make sense. And that was that. I should also add that I had to watch this match after everything else because this was a portion that was missing from the place that I was watching it first. So I had a much bigger appreciation for this match, especially considering what was to come.
And that's everyone where, let's just say Starrcade at this point was at a very high peak on a mountain. Mm-hmm. And then they just tumbled and tumbled and tumbled. Beginning with Scott Hall coming out to cut a survey. Now, I don't know how many people out there were avid watchers of WCW at the time. But Scott Hall would come out as a member of the main heel group, the New World Order. And he would do this survey. And it was a total babyface promo to put over the New World Order. Where he would come out and be like, who's here to see WCW?
What he said even to begin the promo was like, boy, it sure feels good to be in...
Washington.
Washington. That's what he said. He said that off the top.
And he would deliver the lines in such a way that the fans were obviously going to get behind the NWO. And it would build to, you know, when he'd say WCW so fast, there'd be no reaction. Or, are you here to see? And everyone shouts NWO. And Shivani has to act dumb like no one is chanting NWO when the entire arena is in the palm of Scott Hall's hand. Mm-hmm. He says that Nash is not going to be here tonight and says the Giant wins the match by forfeit. So the Giant comes down and says Nash is scared and he is a patient man and he's going to be in pro wrestling for a long time and Kevin Nash will have to come back and face him. He calls Hall slick and then Hall throws a toothpick at him, attacks the Giant who no-sells and then headbutts and press slams Hall, and this ends with a powerbomb as a message to Kevin Nash. And Mike Tenay says it's WCW 1, NWO 0. Now, this was not a match. He just powerbombed him. Now, my other question is that if you had to scramble for a replacement match, could this not have been a match?
Maybe Hall was injured as well.
Maybe Hall also had a small heart attack. Nonetheless, WCW 1, NWO nothing. Yeah. And based on a match later, I guess you could consider that a match, actually, everybody, because finishes were not mandatory on this, biggest show in WCW history. Then we go to a six-man throwaway tag with Scott Norton, Vincent, and Randy Savage. One of those three do not belong. Taking on the Steiner brothers, who were with Ted DiBiase and Ray Traylor. Ray Traylor, everybody.
I'm still trying to figure out which of the three do not belong, because you can make a case for all three of them.
Well, I think Scott Norton and Vincent were on a level, and so was Randy Savage, and they were not the same levels. Savage, they explain, is subbing for Conan and is with Elizabeth. Shivani brings up the NWO win at Fall Brawl 1996.
How did Randy Savage end up in the NWO? Wasn't Randy Savage the one that Hogan turned on when they formed the NWO in the first place?
Yes.
So how does this guy suddenly come out and become the secret partner to Vincent and Scott Norton like a year later?
It was weird. They kind of took Elizabeth like hostage, I think, and she ended up just joining them. And then Savage joined, and he was okay with it. Oh, he has a short fuse, or maybe a longer one. More patience. Anyway, Shivani brings up the Fall Brawl 96 event, where the NWO won the War Games main event, where they could win the right to sub-tag partners and have power over making matches. About that. They had the power to make matches whenever they wanted.
Okay.
All right.
Why would you make this?
Well, I'm just saying, why would you ever have... Like, if you have the power to make matches, why would you ever book yourself in competitive matches?
Wait, that's
what they explained on this. That's how Shivani explained it.
So they can make any type of match, including title matches?
I would assume so.
So why wouldn't they just book all the teams in title matches?
That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
Let's stop thinking so hard.
Scott Steiner looked insane here.
God damn, yeah. He was already huge at this time. Ray Traylor was wearing these leather pants.
Yeah.
And they weren't...
flattering.
Cop leather pants either.
Maybe they were pleather. We see a lot of power moves. Big slam by Traylor onto Vincent for a big pop. Steiner's hit a DDT to Vincent off the shoulders of Rick.
It looked...
holy fuck, hideous. They almost killed Vincent here.
This poor guy.
Norton ends up breaking the count. This insane maneuver was not even the finish of this six-man forgettable match.
Yeah.
They had to continue. Then we see a top rope Hurricane Rana by Scott to Vincent. Vincent was dead at this point. He just took a DDT off the shoulders of Rick Steiner. Mm-hmm. Then a top rope Hurricane Rana by Scott. Then Savage breaks the count. Top rope Hurricane Rana will not keep Vincent down either. Then Scott goes for a Hurricane Rana onto Savage. You knew Savage was not taking that. And Norton picks him up for the electric chair, and Savage hits a top rope elbow drop for the win. So, I guess this is WCW 1, NWO 1.
Yes, okay. Loud cheers. Very loud cheers for the NWO. It was a very... you know what? I was actually surprised at how many WCW fans there were. I thought it would just be more...
This
one-sided.
Was like the peak period of WCW.
Mm-hmm.
Okerlund plugs the WCW hotline and says that the rank-and-file wrestlers are here, including some new faces you won't believe. Wow, what an inadvertent way to just bury your roster. Our rank and file guys are here. The nobodies are here. Okerlund then brings out J.J. Dillon to announce that Nick Patrick will be the referee. And Okerlund says that will raise a lot of eyebrows, but must be the politically correct choice to make. So for those that are not familiar with this, Nick Patrick is like the Steve Mazzagatti of WCW at the time. He was a heel ref with the NWO. Then he left to rejoin WCW. So a lot of people suspicious. Third match of the night way, Bill Goldberg against Steve McMichael. Now, this was before Goldberg had really caught on. He had just debuted a few months prior. They show the flock in the crowd here without shirts on. And Schiavone notes, this is the match we've waited quite a while for. Don't include me in that. They fight in the aisle to start the match. Goldberg carries McMichael to the ring, which was a bit of a odd metaphor here for Goldberg's entire WCW run.
Okay.
We see a sidewalk.
Not in this match, though.
This match was just neither guy could carry the other. I didn't like this match at all. We see a sidewalk slam by McMichael, nearly drops Goldberg in doing so.
In the middle of the match, Goldberg picks up a table and for some reason just picks it up and stands it up against the ring post on the outside of the ring.
Yeah, of course.
and then goes back right into the ring.
Yeah, just goes back in, table's out there. Goldberg rolls through into a leg lock. Then we see a spear, but a kick out by McMichael. Crowd seems very distracted here by something going on. Goldberg teases slamming McMichael over the top rope through the table, but McMichael counters. Then McMichael comes off the apron, through the table, and we get an ECW chant. McMichael then attempts a tombstone, but can't lift Goldberg. Goldberg then hits the jackhammer for the win. And Schiavone calls this, quote, only chapter 4 in what will be a long story between Goldberg and Mongo. Oh, and God. Thankfully, chapter 4 was the end of the book.
Okay. So,
bad match, Way.
Yeah.
Steve McMichael, like, I don't think he gets his due as one of the worst wrestlers ever. He was horrible.
Sure. I mean,
that Road Wild event we reviewed where it was him and, I can't even remember who it was against.
Yeah,
Brian Adams. That's one of the worst matches I've ever seen.
He's no good, but the booking in this match was no good either.
Goldberg went 6 minutes.
Yeah, but think about this.
4 minutes longer than he should have.
Okay, so to create the back injury to explain why Mongo couldn't lift Goldberg for the tombstone, they had to put Mongo through a table to make a back injury so that he would not be able to use a tombstone.
Well, yeah, you got to keep Steve McMichael strong.
Hold on, but a table spot should end a match no matter what. You're using a table spot here that was, from a table that was elaborately set up for no reason on the outside to work an injury angle.
Sure.
In the middle of a match to explain why this guy can't hit his finisher.
Oh, yeah.
There's something so backwards about that.
Raven comes out and Schiavone and Rhodes wonder where the flock is after we just saw them in the crowd in the last match. The storyline is that Raven has been scheduled to face Chris Benoit for the past month, and he either doesn't show up or uses a flock member to wrestle for him. So here we build to, you know, WCW's WrestleMania, and Raven says when he signed with WCW, he wouldn't conform to their rules or corporate structure and would have certain steps included, and has chosen tonight not to wrestle, and instead we're going to get Perry Saturn. So on a night where they've already false advertised Kevin Nash showing up, they deliberately swerved you on getting to see Chris Benoit and Raven that they've built up for the past month.
Have they? Wow. Okay.
So we get Perry Saturn and Chris Benoit. Now, maybe on paper, some of you thought this would be great. I did not think so.
No.
Chris Benoit cut one of the worst promos I've ever heard. He was so bland here.
It was so bad.
He says, quote, the crippler no more. When I rest in reason. And when I move in passion.
You actually just did it 10 times better than he did.
Which is not saying a
lot. This guy was like, he stutters like 3 times. And even at the end, Dusty makes fun of him and he says, well, he told him, didn't he? And we still have no idea what Benoit said. I have absolutely no clue what Benoit said afterwards. It was just, whose brilliant idea was it to give this guy the soliloquy to deliver on live TV?
We see nasty chops from Benoit at the start of the match. The flock attacked Benoit, including Kidman with a shooting star press off the apron to the floor. They show James Vandenberg, Mortis, Greg Valentine, Ultimo Dragon, and Alex Wright in the crowd. And they mention, again, that they paid for their airfare here. Very slow match. Crowd was not into it. Saturn is working on the neck of Chris Benoit. Then we see a baseball slide to the floor, and Benoit applies the crippler crossface. And since it's Raven's rules, it can finish on the floor, which they never explained earlier.
Never. Not until they actually did this, and then Tanae and Dusty basically scrambled for an explanation.
So the flock attacks Benoit. He fights off all of the flock in the ring, and then Benoit finally gets to Raven, but Van Hammer hits him from behind, and Raven then hits the DDT on Benoit. Saturn puts on the Rings of Saturn, and Saturn gets the win.
Who cares?
How does this build to Raven and Benoit?
Well, Benoit wants to get revenge now because they cheated to beat him.
This was the period in time when Kevin Sullivan was booking the show.
Oh, yeah?
And Benoit was, like, jobbing every single pay-per-view.
Was he booking? How much was he actually booking? How much was he
good amount. For? I mean,
and
it was...
Who else were the bookers at this time?
I think Sullivan was the main guy. Obviously, really? Bischoff had a ton of input.
So he was booking this whole Sting Hogan NWO thing?
I believe so.
Wow. Okay. Saturn's hair in this match. Holy shit.
Yeah, this is when he had just come over from ECW. Oh,
well, this guy was just so lost with his look throughout his entire career. He was wearing these khaki pants with this stupid...
like mohawk kind of... Like not even a buzz cut.
A wide mohawk.
Yeah. Ugh. Not good. Up next, we've got Buff Bagwell against Lex Luger.
Fuck.
Totally Buff. Facing off one-on-one.
Ugh.
Bagwell comes out. And he yells into the camera, Lex Luger has a new name. You want to know what it is? Lex Loser. This was so lame.
That's funny.
The storyline in this match is that Bagwell has beat Luger by DQ or countout three times on television leading into this. I thought based on the last match, this would lead to Luger having to face somebody else. Bagwell clotheslined over the top. Then he calls out Vincent for help. Vincent, of all people. This match either had something going on in the crowd, or they really hated Buff Bagwell, because the heat in this match I did not understand, because it was not an entertaining match, but the crowd seemed to be really into something. Dusty brings up fans lining up earlier today, even though they already had tickets, and he cannot understand why fans would do this. Long rest spots with Luger selling, which is never a good thing. Vincent runs in, but Luger fights him off, and then Billy Silverman, the referee, will not call for the DQ. Bagwell then hits Luger from behind and knocks out Silverman. Luger applies the torture rack, and then Savage attacks, but Luger fights him off and then puts Savage in the torture rack. Then we get Scott Norton out, who knocks out Luger with a dog collar and puts Bagwell on top and gets the win. And then they replay this. Yeah. The best part of this whole match was Dusty Rhodes calling the replay, where he wanted to use the term coup de grace, but it pronounced it coup de gray. After Luger nearly finishes Bagwell. And I think they were trying to tease, how did Scott Norton get Rick Steiner's dog collar to start the breakup of the Steiner brothers? Which would ultimately end with Scott joining the NWO.
Oh, God.
They were so clever, way. Because if you were about to join a group, why wouldn't you give them your dog collar as a sign you're working with them?
Here, hit him with my dog collar. This is awful. This match was a piece of shit. It had everything you expected from...
And they went long!
This pairing. These two had absolutely zero control of momentum. I didn't understand it all. There were like three separate rear chin lock spots that lasted forever. This is a Buff Bagwell specialty, the rear chin lock.
It's horrible.
Luger would go for his comebacks, and for whatever reason, Bagwell would just always stop them and then go for another rear chin lock. And this just kept repeating. Like I said, I don't know how the crowd was so hot for it.
Then we move on to the United States title match, Kurt Hennig against Diamond Dallas Page. And some fan had a sign that said, Hennig is perfect. DDP gets the best reaction of anyone up until this point on the show. Rhodes discusses DDP's taped ribs and how they won't heal when you are constantly in, quote, Mortal Kombat, and makes a crack about creating the Sting World Order. It's like, who's interested? Who's interested?
Yeah.
Giovanni's like, sign me up! God, these announcers sounded like dorks. Hennig attacks the back and wears down DDP. We see a slingshot over the top to Hennig by DDP, and they tease going to fight in the crowd. DDP then pulls Hennig's legs towards the post for a low blow. He attempts to diamond cutter, but Hennig holds on to the ropes, and DDP ends up taking a bump, and then Hennig gets a near fall out of that mistake. And we see an Irish whip reversal by DDP into the diamond cutter, and he gets the win, and they play this up as DDP's first major title he has won, even though you and I, Wei, have reviewed how many shows where he's had the TV title.
I don't remember.
Anyway, he celebrates in the crowd. Rhodes calls the diamond cutter the hold of the 90s.
Sure. It's also the hold of the 2000s, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's very, very accurate. Any thoughts on this match?
Well, Wei? I thought it started, this match, considering who was in it, I'm a fan of both men, but I thought it started quite disappointingly, and I thought it could have moved better, but the outcome definitely revived the crowd.
Got them into this.
Yeah.
Then they showed Jeff Katz and Mark Madden with Eddie Guerrero interviewing him on the website. Then Bret Hart comes down to officiate the next match.
This was Bret Hart's first appearance in WCW.
He was on a Nitro. I looked this up before. But yeah, first like major appearance. Horrible theme music. Just horrible.
Dude, this was
like elevator music.
It was like, yeah, okay.
You spent $3.5 million on this guy per year.
Yeah.
And you can invest in something a little more transparent, something a little more catchy.
It was something like, it was like Southern horseback riding music.
It was so bad. The reaction, it doesn't come across on TV at all here. Like, the crowd cared even. Like, this was supposed to be a huge deal. This is Bret Hart in WCW. Yeah. At the peak of his notoriety, coming off the most famous match of the last 25 years.
Yep.
Just brutal.
It's really sad. It really is sad, you know, especially knowing what would happen after this. Just, I mean, the disappointment.
This was actually one of the more high points of his WCW run.
Really?
Oh. Then we see the match is Eric Bischoff, who's accompanied by Scott Hall, taking on Larry Zbysko, where if Bischoff won, Nitro would become NWO Nitro, and if Zbysko won, it would stay with WCW. And we've got Bret Hart as the referee. Zbysko is introduced as having over 5,000 matches. A ridiculous claim.
You can have 5,000 matches.
That would... He wrestled from like 72 until like 94.
Mm-hmm.
In 22 years. That's a lot of matches.
It's doable, isn't it? What is 22 times?
I can't do the math. I'm sure it physically could be done. I just highly doubt it was done. Zbysko doesn't look like a guy... Zbysko gets around pretty good for a guy that bumped 5,000 times.
He could have done some one all-day tournaments.
Maybe. Bischoff is in a kickboxing outfit, lands a punch, and then celebrates. Tanay brings up the history of these mixed martial arts style of matches.
They actually said mixed martial arts.
In 1997.
Yeah.
And how the wrestler usually thrives in these contests. Unfortunately.
And he's right. Yeah. Even to this day.
It's true. Bischoff bails to the floor for advice from Hall, and... Hall does the crane. Zbysko then takes him down.
Who?
Scott Hall. You know the crane movement?
That's right. Okay. For like a martial arts.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Zbysko then takes him down and rubs his face into the Starcade logo. And Bret Hart admonishes Zbysko for grabbing the hair. Zbysko then applies the sleeper. And Hart says it's a chokehold. Then Zbysko applies the leg scissors. And Hart says that is also a chokehold. So they're teasing that Bret is with the NWO.
You can't apply a leg lock like that. You're going to construct his breathing.
What is a sleeper hold, then, if it's not a choke?
It's supposed to be a blood choke. I guess it can't be an air choke. I don't know the rules of wrestling. Somebody give me the rule book.
Zbysko uses the rope-a-dope method, where Eric Bischoff punches himself out, and then Zbysko makes his comeback, which builds to a vertical suplex. Bischoff's then put in the tree of woe. Hall is knocked down from the apron. Then, with Hart distracting Zbysko, Hall loads up the boot of Bischoff, and Bischoff kicks Zbysko in the face. Hart teases aligning with Bischoff, but then he clocks Bischoff and also takes out Scott Hall to the biggest pop of the night thus far.
He spent an eternity, Scott Hall, putting this... it looked like the size of a Game Boy into Eric Bischoff's foot. And by the time Eric actually kicked Zbysko, the thing had already flown out.
Yeah.
It didn't hit Zbysko at all. And this whole time, Bret was facing the direction of Scott Hall and Eric Bischoff. So he was made to look like the dumbest referee in history.
Hart then puts Hall in the sharpshooter as Hall taps. And Zbysko strangles Bischoff. And then all of a sudden... Bret just raises the hand of Zbysko without a finish.
Zbysko at this point was choking out Eric Bischoff using a belt. I don't know where he got this belt from. But the same guy that was being admonished for applying a sleeper hold, was now being awarded the victory via strangulation.
It's like Eric Bischoff could not do a job in this match. Was that the
No,
big
I don't. I think it was just stupid, dumb booking. I think that was.
Yeah, well,
it.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand why. Like, this is your big culmination of all of these storylines, and it was like, we're just going to fuck you out of finishes to continue stuff going. Like, yeah. No end to Nash and the Giant, no finish to Raven and Benoit, no finish to this. Like, Bischoff can't even do the job at the end of this for WCW to get that win, and we were still in store for the main event. The biggest main event in WCW history, Hulk Hogan against Sting for the WCW title. Michael Buffer does an intro for Hogan. Then we get a light show with some kid's voice introducing Sting, which I thought was at least something different.
Mm-hmm.
Came across.
Yeah, it was good.
Like Sting was a big deal here coming in. And
the fake lightning was a bit much, though, but otherwise I really enjoyed
it. But anyway, we get stalling to start the match by Hogan. Massive chance of Hogan sucks. Hogan attacks Sting and keeps yelling, "Come on, hero. Come on, hero." We see a drop kick to the floor by Sting for a pop. Then this match just got so slow. We saw sleepers. We saw shoulder blocks. God. Vertical suplex by Hogan, which is no-sold by Sting. And Hogan sells to the fullest for his reaction. Hogan knocks out Sting with the baseball bat. He attempts a comeback but misses a splash as Sting goes into the steel barricade. Then Hogan hits the boot to the face and cups his ear to the crowd. Then he hits the leg drop. Patrick counts 1, 2, 3. Nick Patrick counts 3. We think Hulk Hogan has won. But then Bret Hart will not allow the timekeeper to ring the bell. And Hart says he won't let what happened to him happen again.
He didn't say that.
Yeah, he did.
Are you sure? Because I couldn't hear anything.
He said it faintly on the microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
It was hard to hear.
This was your big angle.
Well, come on, they didn't have their audio
ready. He doesn't
even
have a microphone.
Well,
the camera cuts to him, almost misses it.
He clocks Nick Patrick, then he throws Hogan back into the ring. There's a huge reaction to this. Sting hits the Stinger Splash, then Sting fights off Bagwell and Norton, hits a second splash in the corner, and then Sting puts on the Scorpion Deathlock on Hogan, and he gets the win.
Ugh.
Terrible booking of this finish. Oh. Nick Patrick was not even teasing being a heel during this match, nor was the fast count noticeable at all, and it made Hart and Sting come across like heels in this match, fucking over Hogan. Mm-hmm. The babyfaces then all get into the ring to celebrate with Sting in the ring with the title. Crowd was really into the closing scene, which just tells you they just wanted anything, even this convoluted finish.
This crowd, they couldn't have asked for a better crowd for this piece of shit show. They were so cooperative.
Schiavone says that WCW has risen from the ashes tonight, which was the exact opposite. And Sting then yells into the camera something that includes the word mamacita.
Yeah, and what was that?
I don't know. And did you catch Tony Schiavone's sign-off?
No.
For Dusty Rhodes, for Mike Tenay, the NWO can bite us. Tool. Just a tool.
Oh, man.
That was Starrcade, everyone. An event that I will give a 10 out of 10 in terms of the promotion. And then when the show started, I give this, you know what? I have to give this a 0 out of 10. Because this show, Way, to me, was like the WrestleMania 17 of the WCW's boom period. They would have a bigger year.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, I think it was. This was the peak.
WrestleMania 17 was a good show.
I'm saying that it represents their peak.
Yes.
The peak of their popularity boom. I'm not comparing the quality of the shows. It's night and day. But what I'm saying is that this was 98, WCW would have their biggest year financially. But anyone who watched this show and was watching WCW at the time, you knew that there were problems with this. And 98, they were falling apart despite doing all this great business. And by 99, that's when they started to kill off their audience. But this to me was the beginning of the end for WCW. This is where I would have finished the NWO angle. WCW gets their big win and defeats the NWO. They never got that big win, and this was the show to do it at. And they decided to just squeeze the life out of the NWO. I never thought they were that effective after this show. Yeah. 97 was probably the best year of WCW's history. Not financially, but in terms of quality and business jumping.
was huge. And this, to me, was a gigantic failure of a tremendously promoted event.
I also give it 0 out of 10.
Wow, both of us agree.
Because it just sucked.
Well, there you go, everybody. That was Starrcade. We apologize if we got you to watch it. We are going to get into our feedback in just a second. But first, we wanted to air a bit of an interview. This was taking place all the way back in October of 2006 when Dan Lavransky chatted with Eric Bischoff, and he discussed a bit about the whole NWO creation, how long it ran, some of the problems with it. So here's a quick snippet of that interview with Eric Bischoff.
We have to talk about the NWO. You know, it was an amazing angle at the time, had the whole wrestling world on fire, certainly made people like myself sit up and take notice, because when the angle initially began, we were not yet getting Nitro in Canada at that time. So we would just hear about it and stuff like that. And so it was quite a big deal. I wanted to ask you, though, about basically, I guess, where you came up for it, because you talked about Japan in the book, but I was under the understanding, and I could be wrong, that you saw New Japan do some sort of invasion-style angle as well, and that kind of gave you the idea to try it in North America.
Well, it's not quite that. What I saw, you know, I'll back up a little bit. You know, in 93, 94, early 95, I was spending a lot of time in Japan, and at that time, The wrestling business in Japan was extremely strong. They were putting 60 and 80,000 people in the Tokyo Dome for their big shows. They were charging $100 and $200 a ticket, you know, for the seats. It was an incredibly successful era in Japan at that time. So I would go to Japan on a regular basis to you know, in the course of my business, but really to kind of study what it was about the Japanese presentation of wrestling that made it so successful. And what I learned over the course of a couple of years was that, you know, first of all, the Japanese culture is so much different than the American culture or even, you know, Western culture, that it would be really hard to import a lot of the formulas, the creative formulas that worked in Japan into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
One example I'll give you is that, you know, here, you know, around the world, particularly in the U.S. and Canada, we all know what sports entertainment is. We know that it's not real. We've had that shoved down our throats now for a long time, and everybody accepts it for what it is. However, in Japan, at least in the early and mid-90s, the audience there believed it was real.
Right, right.
And the media treated it like a legitimate sport.
Yeah, so it would be like on the front page of the sports and stuff like that.
Exactly. So because of the way, you know, the press and the media treated it, because of the way the promoters produced it, it was very, very real to the Japanese audience, which made it a lot easier. So one of the things I walked away from is, okay, we have to make our stuff feel more believable. We've got to take the time, kind of like what we talked about earlier, we've got to take the time and be disciplined and find the right opportunities to create the illusion that what these people are seeing are real.
Right.
Here in the U.S. And that's obviously a lot more difficult because we're all so cynical and so knowledgeable
right,
about
right.
business. So that was one element. And then I had heard, you know, on numerous occasions about different, you know, invasion angles, you know, that had taken place over the course of the years. So as I'm, you know, just kind of learning about the Japanese psychology and what worked and just gathering information, I started applying a little bit of what I was learning to what could happen here in the United States.
Right, right, right.
It all kind of coincided and dovetailed into the NWO storyline.
Right, right, right. Yeah, no, at the time it was absolutely amazing. It had a great run, but the one thing that I think unfortunately killed it at the end. Well, there was two things really. I mean, it got to a point where it seemed like they were just trying to put an NWA shirt or NWO shirt on a guy just to try to get him over, and it kind of diluted the whole thing. And the other thing is, you never really saw WCW get their revenge on the NWO, which you would have liked to have seen.
Well, I can't argue with what your perception of it was, but clearly, you know, it wasn't a situation where we were just, you know, throwing shirts on people assuming they were going to get over. You know, on the one hand, I will admit that, you know, the NWO was such a terrific phenomenon that anybody associated with it, you know, became white hot, you know, just by association, at least in the beginning. And I won't deny that there was probably some tendency to exploit that, you know, but I don't think it was quite as drastic as, you know, we were just throwing shirts on people trying to get them over.
Right.
What was really going on behind the scenes was that, you know, I wanted two brands. I mean, let's face it, you know, if we're going to be honest about it, you know, the NWO was really my opportunity, if you will, to create what everybody wished they would be able to see but never would, which was WCW versus WWE.
Right, right.
That was never going to happen. The next best thing was to create my own kind of organization that people felt, you know, we could create our own war with.
Right.
And much like, you know, the WWE split into two separate brands between SmackDown and Raw, the NWO, because of its success, was really going to be our entree into creating our own separate brand.
Right.
Which is why we gave it its own pay-per-view. The NWO sold-out pay-per-view was our first attempt to try to create, our first step, I guess I should say,
right,
in creating our own separate brand. The WCW Thunder Show was originally going to be an NWO show. Well, if you're going to create two separate brands and have two separate pay-per-views and two separate television series, you clearly have to have a much deeper roster than three guys.
Right, sure, of course, fair enough.
That's really what that was all about. It was our ability to try to take the momentum of the NWO and create two separate and distinctive brands and have our own war.
Right, right, right. And so I guess the idea would be that the war would constantly go back and forth and that drama would keep the viewers engaged.
Take go back 10 years in time, you know, since everybody wished they could have seen WCW versus WWF, take that WWF, insert NWO, and just, you know, create your own competition.
Well, thank you, Eric. That was Eric Bischoff's explanation, and that whole 45-minute interview is up at thefightnetwork.com/podcasts on page 19, if you want to seek it out.
Really?
Yes.
Page 19, but will it stay at page 19?
For a little bit, at least, yeah.
Okay.
Until we upload enough podcasts, and then it gets bumped to page 20.
Okay, well, it'll be around there.
Yes. So that, everyone, was our review of Starrcade 97. So let's get into the feedback, way. We'll start off with Andy Gordon. Hey, guys, don't be so down on TNA Impact. I do agree with the Kurt Angle thing with the casket and his early return. John Cena is a good example of guys who return early and get injured again. Maybe it will improve once they begin to build up Genesis.
Okay. What did you say?
Huge maybe. I don't know. It's like, don't be down on Impact. Maybe they'll be better.
I do agree with the Kurt Angle thing with the casket.
Okay. Oh, he does agree.
Wait, but he's saying that John
Cena
agrees. Is a good example of guys who return early. Oh, what?
I don't understand.
I don't know. Sorry. Just ignore. Richard Lee. Hey, guys. Sorry I haven't been on for a bit, but having some internet issues out here in the bush that is East Selkirk. Anyway, great jobs as always on the Review Aways, Raws, and Impacts. And second, I have to blame you guys for turning me onto Girl Talk. That is the best piece of music I've heard in a while, and wonder if you guys are also into Deadmau5, as that has gotten me back into DJ-based music over the past while. Please, though, that song from Angelina was so fucking horrible, it almost made me go back to DJ 2112 mode and add lyrics a la the R-Truth theme. Anyway, a suggestion for a future show. The July 6, 1998 Nitro, where Goldberg won the title from Hogan, or the 1999 SummerSlam from Minneapolis with the three-way with Austin, Foley, and Triple H for the WWE Championship. Gotta go, and John, going to T is the best move you'll ever make.
Oh, wow. Thanks.
Well, you've since stopped drinking tea?
I've been having tea. I've had the odd coffee this week. I think I had two this week. So I'm kind of purgatory.
I'm not into Deadmau5. I've heard maybe a couple songs of his, but I haven't really been exposed too much to his discography.
All right.
I've heard good things.
Daniel,
he's from Toronto.
Oh, is he?
Yep.
All right. Daniel Longworth. On some podcasts of Review Away, you guys act like you're reviewing a show right after the law when you really recorded it a couple of days before that. How come? I.e. the Survivor Series 92 podcast, when you're talking about the latest Survivor Series results when you haven't even seen the show. I don't understand.
Yeah. Like, we watch the show, and then we, you do the law, and then we do this, and so, then we just comment.
It's currently 1:44 a.m. right now.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
Anyway. Brian Hillhouse. Where to start with Starrcade 97? I was a loyal WWF fan back then, but I would tape the Nitros on TSN and fast-forward through them to see WCW's Weekly. Fuck you to the viewer when they would tease a Sting appearance and he wouldn't show up until the end, a mere 30 seconds or less before they went off the air. And then the big payoff at the pay-per-view. I felt like from a WCW fan's point of view, the entire angle, from the beginning of the Sting and the Raptors vignettes to the end of the match with Hogan, was like having a really good sex, only to have the girl take a shit in your mouth at the end. Wow.
What a horrible comparison. That's, sorry if wrestling made you feel like that. That's,
So he would tape Nitros and then fast forward just to see the terrible parts.
It's like self-torture.
Yeah, why would you do that to yourself?
Come on, come on. Treat me like crap.
Get some hobbies.
Stefan Kyle Gosain. Hey guys, really looking forward to the review of Starrcade 97. I can't wait to hear your views on the not so fast count and other things. It's funnier in that I was planning on requesting this pay-per-view as I was listening to this week's review away. You guys must be psychic. Quick, buy lotto tickets. Also, during this week's Raw, when Barrett called out Cena on not being a man of his word, I kept thinking back to Pollock making the same complaint last week on review of Raw. What do you think about this odd stipulation or the Nexus insurrection? I hate the Cena thing completely. I think it's just such a... You want to talk about a giant fuck you to your audience. That's it right there. Mm-hmm. I hate it.
Ahmad Butts. After the King of the Ring review, I maintain that the two of you should review my life. I would like to mention that on last night's Observer Radio, Dave Meltzer answered an email about World War III and the Hogan Observer angle. Meltzer said when it was going on, he was laughing about it. As to why WCW did it, he didn't know ahead of time, nor did he ever find out why. Essentially, that WCW swerved for the sake of swerving. Said it was just the beginning of their obsessions and problems. There's no doubt in my mind that a review away or emailed in that question. My only thoughts on Raw are that it's a shame we live in a world in which John Cena delivers awful comedy lines that only serve to bury a 5-month Nexus storyline. CM Punk continues to be amazing with lines like, "You two are really beautiful people," and "John, my diet soda, what are you doing?"
He has had some very, very good lines on Raw. Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm starting to enjoy CM Punk. Brian Lindberg. So I was listening to a recent podcast while doing some work, and my wife came to inquire as to what I was listening to. She doesn't like wrestling, but forgives slash ignores my obsession with it, and has accepted that the TV is mine on Mondays and Fridays. I guess one of you sounds familiar, because she asked who it was, and that's when things got weird. I guess she figured Wei Ting was a gimmick name, because she responded, "Well, that's lame. Sorry, Wei." When I stopped laughing at her and explained that Wei is Asian, and yes, that's his actual name, she was embarrassed. I hope you guys find this as funny as I did. Off topic slightly, what is the best and worst gimmick names ever? My vote for best is Irwin R. Scheister. Talk about a guy who took crap and turned it into gold, and I cannot decide on a worst. Too many candidates.
I don't know. I don't know if there are...
Huge erection that Bill DeMott had. Yeah. That was pretty bad.
Any misfits in action.
Yeah, any general erection he later went under as. I always just hated any stupid names that had some like sexual entendre to them.
Yeah, I just...
Remember, Stacy Keibler was Miss Hancock?
Yeah.
So clever.
Well, I'm not really a fan. I like my wrestling to feel real.
Yeah.
And I don't know. If
those ones jump out at me.
Well, just incredible, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who cares? Biggest fan.
Spears taking you down today.
It's the show as well. I'm sorry. Biggest fan. First off, John's coffee stories are always enjoyable and remind me of my own history with coffee. Also, great to hear the original "I Think We're Alone Now" at the end of Review Away after I mentioned it last week in my feedback. I look forward to your thoughts on Starrcade 1997. Looking at the card, it's pretty weak, but this was pretty much the pinnacle of WCW at the time. Keep up the solid reviews, John and Way. I mean, this show is making me realize that the pinnacle of WCW, in hindsight, wasn't even that great. These shows weren't very good.
Well, I mean, this to me was a bit of an aberration for WCW pay-per-views at the time. They were generally They had some really good stuff at this time. It was the undercard that carried it, and then they had terrible main events. That was always the role of WCW. And here you had probably your best worker on the show was sitting in the audience with a mask on.
Yeah.
Donald G. Thomas. Hey, John and Way. Love the King of the Ring review. Got a few odd looks at work when listening to it because I was laughing so hard. For the record, me and some friends paid to watch that one live on pay-per-view. Back in the 90s, we'd share the cost and go to someone's house, and we watched almost all the pay-per-views, which was much easier back then when you only had about six or seven a year. And I can recall that it didn't take us as long to ask the same. No, this is cut off. All right. Oh, we get the point there. It's, still, even during that time, I mean, there were quite a lot of pay-per-views out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this time, there were still 12 a year from WWE and WCW.
And yeah, so it's actually, it wasn't that far off from what it is today. Sam Kennerly, in response to why the KFC Center is called the Yum Center, I was bored, but the Yum Company is the holding company or the corporate umbrella for KFC, Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut. Here is the company website if you're super bored.
No, it's okay. Josh Thomas. Dana White asked some interviewer, what's the best thing about hockey? In wanting the response, fighting. Honestly, my favorite part in hockey is a close game and a winning goal. GSP is a bigger Canadian athlete than the great one? Ha, blow me. That was a comment that Dana White made.
Well, that's an interesting debate. Jack Pisco. Since there is not a wellness policy for Raw and the Law, review away in the law, may I suggest roid rage inducing drugs that will jolt John awake in the morning and wake and stay conscious through these old pay-per-views. You might even win your own Scott Putski Award. For the King Sheamus / Morrison feud, may I suggest a chair match at TLC. Call it a first bow match.
Bow.
First bow match. You can't make me bow. Can you guys change up your intros for the podcast? Have Way introduced the shows instead of John? I don't know about that. What does that mean, though? Okay, well, but why a chair match for bowing?
I don't know. Maybe you'd sit on the chair at the end and he'd bow to you? Wouldn't that be like a throw?
Yeah, but you can stand and then have somebody bow, right?
You could. Somehow it'll probably lead to that. And finally, we've got Jay Hunter here. Hey, lads. Starrcade 97 was a pretty boring watch, but I'm watching it with 2010 eyes. 'Twas a bit crap that there weren't any video packages to set up the matches. Come on, it's your version of WrestleMania. Didn't know what was going on. That said, the Sting video at the start of the pay-per-view and the angle in general was very impressive. Well done, WCW. Mm-hmm. Did you catch that we had two Radicals matches, Malenko and Eddie and Benoit and Saturn? Benoit's promo was god-awful. Wow, it was painfully obvious that someone else scripted it as he fumbled through his poetic promo. They sure had crappy music in WCW. The NWO Jobber theme wouldn't stop playing. Why was Scott Norton all over this show? Virgil Vincent must be the luckiest wrestler in the world to have a job for so many years. He has no redeeming features. Did you notice that practically every wrestler wore black or white? Giant, Steiners, Big Bubba, Savage, Liz, Vincent, Mongo, Goldberg, Luger, Bischoff, Zabisco, Hogan, Sting, and Brett are all guilty of this. Not all of you are in the NWO. When I think of WCW, I think of the color gray and wrestlers that don't have their gimmicks anymore. One last thing. Did you see Nick Patrick's... What is that word?
Hoey? Hoey.
Bump Hoey. When Brett punched him. It's amazing. He's like a jumping salmon. Look forward to the review, fellas. Okay, I don't understand that last part, but thank you for the feedback,
thanks,
Jay.
Hunter. That was great.
Well, there you go, Way. That was a look at Starrcade 1997. And boy, took a lot out of us there, man. A show that I think a lot of people remember better in hindsight than when you actually go back and watch. Well,
look at the show itself. I mean, come on. What stood out for you?
I think more people were just, they think of that fondly because it was during a big period for WCW and it had that great build. But the actual payoff was just horrible.
Listen, yeah, they kept Sting away from Hogan for 18 months. They didn't put him in a match for 18 months.
And they fucked it up.
Yeah, you could definitely applaud a company, anybody, for being able to do that in this or last era. But the match itself, oh my God, terrible. Just consider you had Bret Hart that you fucked up. You had this 18-month build that you fucked up.
And a bad undercard to go with it. It was just a bad, bad night for the WCW promotion.
We didn't even get Raven versus Benoit.
Oh, terrible. We didn't get Kevin Nash and Giant, which probably made this a better card as a result.
All right, so we're going to wrap up here, Wei. You have the pick for next week, so what are you going to go with?
Well, seeing as how it's the Slammies tomorrow night,
yes,
I'd like to go back and review an old edition of the Slammies. Let's review one of the hour-long episodes, and this would be the 1997 Slammies, the last Slammy Awards of the 90s.
All right, so we'll go out there with the Slammy Awards, and then we are back on Tuesday with Review of Raw to chat about this year's Slammy Awards. And, Wei, I thought we'd go out here with, I saw this the other day online. I don't know if you're aware, but, New Kids on the Block and Backstreet Boys are getting set for their...
Of course I'm aware.
...huge tour.
NKOTBSB.
Yes, NKOTBSB performed at the American Music Awards last weekend.
Yeah, I've already seen it.
Well, here we go. The listeners now get a chance to hear the late 80s and the late 90s collide for one gigantic mashup.
80s plus 90s equals
2011.
Performing together for the first time on TV, New Kids on the Block and Backstreet Boys.
You wanna take a chance? Oh my God, we're back again. Don't worry about you, cause it won't take long. Got a question for you, better answer now. Am I original?
Yeah.
Am I the only one?
Yeah.
Am I sexual?
Say what?
Step by step,
ooh baby,
you're on.
time was a great time. Second time was a blast. Third time I fell in love. Now I've got the best of it, baby. Love the way you turn me on.